pill to grow young. Fine minds in a body. This is Dr. Herbert L. Varley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California, with thought for today. Pills to grow young, or fine minds in a body. Now, we have always trained ourselves to grow old. We've trained ourselves to grow old from the time that we were young. We always want to be like our older brothers and sisters, you know, want to be like our daddy or our mommy, and we want to always be older, always. And so as the time passes, we become older. And then we want to look like our role models. And because we want to look like our role models, then we look older and older and older. And pretty soon, our role models become quite old. And so we want to look older like them. Next thing you know, we have gray on the snow on the roof, too. But medical doctors are doing wonderful things. I shouldn't say medical doctors. Actually, if the truth is known, medical doctors don't do anything. Medical doctors, they call them pill pushers, and they are. Medical doctors read their pill books to know what are the remedies for illnesses, and then when their patients come with illnesses, then they say, well, this pill or that pill, or there's a new pill out that'll take care of this for you and that'll take care of that for you, and it has been shown to work. I'm not sure what the side effects are. It might kill you, but the pills are out that can do these things, and they're wonderful things they can do. And so the scientists are the ones who are really finding out what medications will work harmoniously with what medications. And they run trial activities, they run tests, and they do all sorts of things to find out what the pills will do. Well, Ellen and I received a piece of literature, and it said, be 20 years younger, take this pill, be 20 years younger. That's a beautiful 30-page piece of literature trying to promote this stuff. And who knows? It might work, might not. I doubt that it works, because if it works, then it would be even more fanfare. And if one person found it, you could be sure that all the other companies would grab a hold of the pills and find out what they're made of and duplicate them and put them out under their own label. But when we get down to it, all of our aging was done because of role models we had, and all of our youth making is done because of role models we have too. Now, when I was a kid, Charles Atlas was quite popular. You'd buy his course. You pay $27 for it or whatever, and then you take his course and you stretch this muscle and stretch that muscle and do all sorts of interesting things, and people who really applied it, it worked. It worked very well, but it took a lot of effort. It took a lot of dedication, a lot of doing it every day. Every day you pull those muscles, and every day you stretch, and pretty soon you look like Charles Atlas. Well, Charles Atlas wasn't for everybody. Everybody was a 97-pound weakling, but everybody wasn't able to be a Charles Atlas because they didn't have one thing that Charles Atlas had. He had one-pointedness. He's like Schwarzenegger. One-pointedness on weightlifting. One-pointedness on bodybuilding. One-pointedness on health. And there are many other health enthusiasts who were one-pointed on it. And they had beautiful bodies, and they were wonderful examples, and they were encouraging for people to look at and follow. But people made a big mistake. People looked at the magazine, saw Charles Atlas, and said, that's a nice-looking figure. And then they look in the mirror and saw their own figure, and they said, "My, I'll never get there, I'll never get there." And day after day, you work at it. Well, now, those who really were interested in having a beautiful body worked at it. They went out and swam. They went out and they did track. They went out and they played sports, you know, basketball, baseball, soccer, and hockey, and all the other things. And they were quite active in these areas. And then we have another classification. We have a classification of, let me call them, beautiful people. Now, these are beautiful people who do not go after sporting goods, sporting activities, and the doctors have they tell you right straight out that weightlifting and barbells and perfect abs and stuff like that don't come by a lot of exercise. Don't come by, and in fact, exercise isn't going to do anything for you. Exercise isn't going to make any difference for you. The doctors are afraid to say this because then people will stop exercising and they will take away even that little bit that they have. But what the doctors are coming up to, and Hippocrates, the father of medicine, and all the great psychiatrists, psychologists, and philosophers of all time know it, it's not what goes into the mouth, but what comes out. It's not what goes into our wishful thinking, but what comes out of our conviction for ourselves. They say, and tests have been done, of scientists who are at work, like mathematicians, who are busily doing their mathematical stuff, really into their science of mathematics, that they burn more energy than an athlete who is working on the basketball court. You know, and that's a lot of energy those guys burn. They burn more energy. And that people who are sincere, great businessmen, they're so in tune with this, they have beautiful-looking bodies. They really do. They're not fat, not thin, they're just perfect. And their families are perfect because they are so dynamically interested in life and in what they're doing that they have found their pill to grow young. And they don't grow young, they just remain young. When you find fat people, when you find people who are unhealthy, when you find people who are living in any area that they would call not desirable, you find one factor present in their life. They are not dynamically interested in one thing. You can have many interests, of course, but they don't have one major prevailing interest.
Major.
One major interest in their life that just overwhelms them. Like an artist, his art overwhelms him. I don't know, and I'm sure about this, I've never heard of or seen a fat artist, you know? I've never heard or seen a fat writer who was really writing something he loved, not writing garbage. To write garbage is something else again. But to write philosophy. Have you ever seen a fat philosopher? Have you ever seen a sick philosopher?
No.
You've seen some who have some illness or other that they have somehow allowed themselves to advocate, but very seldom, very seldom. It is the exception rather than the rule. And this is true for all of us. Now, would you like to have a happy life? Would you like to have a happy body, a youthful, dynamic body? As I was walking the path this morning, I was thinking to myself, you know, I say I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. I say I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my what? original purity and integrity. I make all these statements, and I'm constantly making them as I'm walking. I'm constantly, and that's when I'm conscious of making them. And I'm making them a lot of other times, and I'm not conscious of making them. It's just, it's part of my nature. Because that's what, whenever I stop doing one thing, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. And then I think to myself, oh, why is it that my body is healthy? Why is it that everything about me is so fantastic? Why is it that, well, I have a little hurt here and there, or a little pinch here or there, or whatever. And what is that? Whenever I lose my direction. Whenever I lose my one-pointedness, I'm whole and perfect. I tell students, when you stub your toe, instantly say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. Instantly, just talk to yourself and shout it out and do whatever, and duh! The pain from your stubbed toe is gone. And that is true. That is true. It works. Now, I'm a millionaire. Let's have that work instantly, too. Well, if I had the same incentive to say those words, I'd have it. If I had the same incentive to say, I live in a happy world, I'd have it. If I had the same incentive to say there's peace on earth, I'd have it. If I had the same incentive to do that. Now, we have old folks' homes. We have homes that people go and move in when they're over the hill. Well, now, wouldn't it be nice to sort of exhume from the graveyards, these old folks' homes? Because that's just a graveyard. That's just the next step, and they're dead. And why have that step at all? That's a silly step to have. But rather, let's go and take all of this refuse that's in these old folks' homes and give them all a pill. Give them all a pill of youth. Give them all a pill of youth. I told you the story of one of my news stories. I was standing outside of a house with some people, and the house was burning down. And this man was standing there with a baby in his arms. And the neighbor lady looked over and said, John, what are you doing standing out here with the baby in your arms? He says, the house is burning down. He says, I was in the bedroom, I was in the wheelchair, and the house was burning down, and I had to save the baby. I got up, picked up the baby, and came out here with it. But John, you can't walk. You're confined to your wheelchair. And that moment, his legs crumpled underneath him, and he fell down, and somebody grabbed the baby. You see, our mind is so fantastic. That's just one illustration, but it points to a million more. He had something to do. Motivation. He had motivation. He had to save his grandson. He didn't think of himself. He just thought his grandson was there, and he was there, and he had to go and take him out of the fire, out of the house. He wasn't concerned about saving himself. He was concerned about saving his grandchild. He had already given up on himself. His self didn't matter at all. His self didn't make any difference. That's why he could crumple so easily when the neighbor lady said, you're confined to a wheelchair. And now, if the neighbor lady had been wise enough to keep her mouth shut, you know, but she didn't. She was so awestruck by the fact that he was contrary to the normal condition that she acted that way, which we sometimes do because we haven't trained ourselves to think young, to think dynamic. No. I believe that we could take all of the people living in old folks' homes and have, say, programs every day that teach them how to say, I'm young, dynamic, alive, I'm young, dynamic, alive, I'm young, dynamic, alive, Vital dynamic alive, I'm 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 vital dynamic alive. On and on until they're crazy. And it won't be long. And they will be vital, dynamic, and live because they're putting a new cause in motion. But God save us. We need to have a role model for these people to make that statement. The nurses go in the hospital and say, "Oh, are you feeling better now? Are you okay now? Oh, you poor little dear. You're such a lovely person. You're such a lovely little baby. You're so, you know, my God, get out of here." Then the nurses come in and say, "Well, how are we today? We are looking great, aren't we?" "That's garbage too." "You look fantastic. My goodness sakes, you are perking up so beautifully. You'll be out here in no time. You'll be home with your family in no time. You'll be. You see, now, can the nurses have the courage to say things like that? Can the doctors say, "You'll be whole and perfect. You're fantastic. Put it away, please. You're fantastic. You're glorious. You're wonderful." You see what I mean? And they're afraid to say that because you said they'd be whole and perfect, and then they weren't. And that was your fault. Well, no, it's their fault. It's your fault for saying that they said that. You should say of yourself, "I'm whole and perfect." If a doctor is willing to say you're whole and perfect, you should be willing to take it for yourself. It always amuses me. Ellen takes Ingeborg into the doctor's appointments whenever she has one, and the doctor, 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, says, "There's nothing wrong with you. We've taken every damn test in the hospital here for you, and there's nothing wrong with you. We've taken the blood test, we've taken your oxygen test, we've taken your this test, that test. Now, if you want a new knee, we'll give you one. If you want a new hip, we'll give you one. If you want a new this, we'll give it to you. But the thing is, you don't need it. But if you mentally... if you mentally need it, then you won't be happy till you get it. And you'll create your body really needing it. And it's better to give it to you when you don't need it than after you really do need it, because then you got other problems." But how would you like the job of going into the old folks' home and saying to them, "People, you're vital dynamic alive. I'm vital dynamic alive. I'm vital dynamic alive." 24 hours a day. 24. Now, if you did that, what would happen to you? You would have the greatest gift, you know. To you would be the greatest gift. "I'm vital dynamic alive." And every one of those characters who's sitting back there, "I'm vital dynamic alive," pretty soon they'd be hopping up and down. They'd be jumping out of their wheelchairs. They'd be leaving their walkers and canes behind, and their legs would feel fine. Read an article about glucosamine, how it is not really good for your joints and stuff like that. That it really has a side effect that is quite not nice. But the thing is, we've been sold on this is it. We've been sold on these are the things to do. And if we keep reading the things that we're sold on, that we know what the principle is. And I'm so sorry that you guys don't practice it. Ellen, how do you learn mathematics?
Two is four.
2 times 2 is 4. Mathematics is apparently not her field. But how do we learn mathematics?
2 times 2 is 4.
One phrase. Not the whole mathematical gambit. One phrase. What do we do when we say 2 times 2 is 4 and pretty soon we believe 2 times 2 is 4? What do we do?
We set the foundation of mathematics.
Then we believe in mathematics. Then we have accepted the principle of mathematics as ours and we apply it. If you say, "I'm whole and perfect," and your body's a mess, But you say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. And you keep saying it, keep saying it, keep saying it. What are you doing?
I'm setting a cause in motion.
You are putting the cause in motion that your body is whole and perfect. Now, you're doing what with principle? You're living the principle. You're using the principle. Yes, and you see, this is what we teach here, and this is what we do. People say, I want to go to the University of Healing and be healed. I want to go there and have a healing take place for me. Well, come. You're welcome. But the thing is, there's nobody here going to lay on hands on you.
No.
Nobody here going to tell you that you're something that you're not. Because the University of Healing is filled with a lot of human blind people. They're blind to all human limitations. They see with divine eyes only. At the University of Healing, people see only with divine eyes. They see only that all is whole and perfect now. They see all is magnificent now. They see it is done. Pill to grow young? That's your mind. I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect, I'm vital dynamic alive, I'm vital dynamic alive. And then what about the other one? Fine minds in a body? Science has done research and still does research with the old birds. And they will go in and they will test them. And they'll take a random group in various places. And then they will start them out on the simplest of word games or on the simplest of crossword puzzles and so on. Very simple, very simple, very simple that anybody can do. Even people who are CEOs now retired and they've given up on life, you know, and they can't do anything anymore. When did they stop being so brilliant? When did they stop being so brilliant and go, when did they get Alzheimer's? When did they get all of these interesting things? It's because they gave up on living. Now, as you start working with people on crossword puzzles and on things of the mind game, which get their mind active and thinking again, and on interesting things, pretty soon their mind wakes up. And when your mind wakes up, then what happens? When your mind wakes up, then what must follow like night to day?
The body wakes up.
That the body wakes up. The body wakes up when the mind wakes up. It is our minds that are asleep. It is our minds that feel sorry for ourselves. It is our minds that have all sorts of misinformation about who and what we are. Are you your father's son and daughter or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. You are your own mind's child.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're not the child of your parents. You're not the genes of your parents. They're now proving that children, well, they've known this all the time, but children born in the same family can come up with all sorts of different variations. But then they say, well, that goes back several generations onto this gene structure, into that DNA structure, into these things. Nonsense. All it does, I was listening to a talk that I gave this morning, and the talk said, yes, they have cars that have 25, 35, 45 miles a gallon, and 50 miles to a gallon, and 100, and soon it'll be over 100 miles to a gallon, but they have the 100 to a gallon now. And it's true. They have cars, but the cars are built to be light, to be dramatic. You want cars? You want cars that are used in the Indy's 500 in a racetrack with these tremendous gas guzzler engines to get 100 miles to the gallon too.
Wow.
Now how? How? By fuel efficiency. How do you get the fuel efficiency? Do you know they are now available plugs, not, I guess spark plugs would be the word, spark plugs that are operated by laser, so that the laser is designed to know where the spark should go and sending the spark there in the engine activity. It's a complicated thing, but a very fascinating thing. Fascinating. Now, with that, they should be able to be 1,000 miles to a gallon on any size engine. When you look at the battery energy on the Hubble lasting all these many years and rejuvenating itself occasionally as it goes around to different magnetic fields up there or whatever it does, and then all of a sudden starts sending back signals again. What I'm saying is there's no limit to what the brain can come up with. There's no limit to what the mind can reveal to us. There's no limit, leave it alone, there's no limit to what can go on in our world. There's no limit if we will put the right causes in motion. Now, Sylvia, I'm going to give you a test. I want you to come to the table tomorrow morning and say, see?
Gone.
Perfect. And how is that going to happen? Home perfect, home perfect, home perfect. 24 hours between now and then. You say, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect. And you know it, you know it, you know it, you know it, and there is no room for it to exist anymore. You understand? I'm home perfect. Now, does it really matter to you? And apparently not, because you haven't done it up to now. But does it really matter to you? Or are you going to put a new cause in motion right now to have it matter? Now, don't indicate one way or the other. Tomorrow we'll see what your choice was. But now, these people living in the old folks' homes, they can be rejuvenated. They don't have to die. They live forever. Well, what about those old bodies? Well, as soon as they get their young minds, their minds vitalized, the bodies will follow along. The bodies will go right along. It'll go right along with what they're doing. Do you understand? It is like night to day, day to night. It just follows. When we put the cause in motion, when we put the law in motion, one of our pending students from Nepal wrote and sent me a complete description on karma. And maybe about 8-10 pages long, and every other paragraph he wrote, and he said, karma is the law of cause and effect. Karma is principle. Karma is how we define our life and how we define our world and how we define ourselves. Karma is this. And you know, if you go through all the philosophies, all the religions, all the teachings of the world, they all come up with the same thing. They have to, because there's only one principle. Mm-hmm. And that's the principle of what?
Law of cause and effect.
And that's the law of cause and effect of what?
Putting the cause into motion.
Excuse me?
Putting the cause into motion.
Putting the cause in motion. Putting the cause in motion. And if we don't put the cause in motion, what good is the cause, the law of cause and effect? What good is karma? And you say, some people like to say, well, it's your previous existences and your previous lifetimes. That's true. That's true. And you know why? You know why that's so? Why is that so?
You want to put yourself down.
All time is right now and here. All time is right now and here. Put yourself down, that's passe.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pointing down with that finger. All time and space is right now and right here. So if you have bad genes, it's because you have claimed them right now and right here in this lifetime from out of the infinite, whatever, you know. And if you claim perfection and wholeness and goodness and peace and honor and love and all that's good, wow, that's yours. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Thomas Merton wrote many books on monasteries, and he was very, very avid and very great aficionado of monasteries. And in his book, throughout his books on the monasteries, that he has been in and been participating in and so forth, one thing stood out. One thing. He said, a monastery has no benefit for anybody, anytime, anywhere, under any circumstances, unless they do one thing. Unless they put it into practice. If you don't put into practice your convictions about yourself and about your beliefs, it means nothing. And I thought to myself, here you have one of the great voices in Catholicism and so forth speaking out on monasteries, and what do they do? What do they do? It's just a matter of application. Are you ready to take your pill? I'm giving one. Here's a pill for you and you and you and everyone else. It's a pill and it's no charge.
Okay.
And it's a pill to grow young. And it's a pill to be young. It's a pill to be who you are. It's your role model. So now, just like when I was a kid, you know, Charles Atlas, I would take a real beautiful body from some guy in a magazine, cut his head off, and paste my head on top, and put it up on my mirror. And that's what I looked at. I didn't look at my own pictures. I just looked at that.
Wow.
And it's very effective. So, well, what's your role model? Is your role model that you are vital, dynamic, alive? Then go for it, enjoy it, experience it right now, today, because it's your reality.
Thank you.
I love you.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Love you. Love you.